Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for joining us today on Sunday morning wake-up call. Our guest, Leslie Coburn. She's the Democratic candidate in the race for the 5th District U.S. House of Representatives. She's a graduate of Yale. She's had a 35-year career in journalism, including as a producer for CBS News 60 Minutes, a correspondent for PBS Frontline, a Ferris Professor of Journalism at Princeton, a writer and an author. She's won 2 Emmys, along with multiple other awards. Ms. Coburn has also done much environmental and conservationist work, and we're fortunate to have her on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Ms. Coburn, running for the 5th Congressional District, the November 6th election, I'd like to know, just to start, what's it like to have your expected competition changed? I mean, when you started, Tom Garrett, and then not even a month later, Denver Riggleman.
Well, it was really bizarre because, first of all, I had a lot of Democratic opponents. I had 5. Initially, there were 5 people. 2 dropped out early, and then there were 3 very serious opponents. So it was a crowded field. And then once we won the caucus convention, very soon after that, suddenly Congressman Garrett bowed out. So I was alone, having had all these opponents. I'd done nearly 40 forums, and it was bizarre. It was like Roadrunner going over the cliff and looking around, and no one was there. But then Denver Riggleman came in, and Denver was chosen by, I think, 19 people. It was just a very small affair with the Republican Party, secret ballot, whereas I had been chosen by thousands and thousands of people. So it was a very different process to get the nomination.
Did this change your thinking in any way from the moment that you stepped up and said, I think I want that position and I have to beat whoever I'm up against to be the Democratic nominee, and then it's going to be Mr. Garrett? And from day one, your end result must beat Tom Garrett. So what is that, 6 months, 9 months, 2 years?
I started 16 months ago and declared in July of 2017. And initially, I got into this as a former journalist. It's very rare to jump over the wall into politics, but I got into this because of our president, Mr. Trump, who I was really appalled by his election, both as a woman and as a former journalist, because he repeatedly said that journalists were the enemy of the people. I saw, too, in Tom Garrett, a mini-Trump. Tom Garrett is part of the Freedom Caucus. He is really a very extreme Republican. Remember that Speaker John Bonner, who is a Republican, called the Freedom Caucus anarchists. He said they want chaos in the House, that they won't even negotiate with their own party, let alone across party lines. So I saw in Garrett a mini Trump. And then once Riggleman came in, he too, Riggleman had been a financial backer of Garrett, and he vowed immediately to join the Freedom Caucus and to repeal the Affordable Care Act, to end funding for Planned Parenthood. And in the first day when he was auditioning for the job, he said, let's all be 7-year-olds and let's clothesline progressives. Clotheslining means slamming someone in the throat. It's a very brutal image. So I felt that it was a direct line from Trump to Garrett to Riggleman. And Riggleman is a supporter of Trump, has very clearly stated so in our debates.
Do you find the size and that makes it a difficult district, the 5th District?
Well, I've put 75,000 miles on my car. It's 10,000 square miles. It's 21 rural counties. It sounds daunting. It sounds impossible. And yet, once you start making the rounds, once you go again and again and again to different counties and build relationships, you find that I see it as really all of a piece. I don't see it as North versus South or Charlottesville versus rural. I see for the big issues, everyone cares about the same issues. So it is a district that is desperately in need of representation. I think our congressman has been missing in action. People are very happy when I tell them that the first thing we're going to do up there is take the door off the hinges, and everybody gets in that office. It will be a place where everyone can be heard.
A door off the hinges allows everyone in, but the size of the district from Danville to Front Royal...
Not quite Front Royal. It's Danville. If you just think, it's like a candlestick. It's Fauquier at the top, and then it's pretty narrow, and then go down to a wide base at the bottom from Henry County on one side all the way over to Brunswick. It's a lot of territory.
So the size of the fifth district and the difference from... sort of the urban academic of Charlottesville to the farmer that you see. How would you represent everyone and their needs and wishes?
Well, you see, that distinction between the urban academic versus the farmer is not quite right. In a lot of rural counties, you have farmers who, in fact, 75% of the farmers around the district do not make their living from their farm. They can't make enough money from the farm, so they're all doing something else. Many are commuters. You have commuters going to Lynchburg, commuters going to Roanoke, commuters going to Danville. It's not just farmers versus UVA academics. And in Charlottesville, there's a huge diverse population in Charlottesville. So some of the exact same issues of transportation, of housing, are issues that you would also find in other counties. The healthcare issue is universal. That people's fear of, because of what's happening now with this administration, of healthcare being taken away from them is a universal concern. In Charlottesville, we had a situation where because the Trump administration took away the subsidies from insurance companies, it meant the ACA could not function the way it was supposed to. And a family of four on the individual market was facing a $36,000 a year bill for health insurance plus $12,000 in a deductible. That's unsustainable. No one can pay that. And that was not just Charlottesville. It was several counties. So that kind of problem is something that's shared by urban and rural. That was a problem faced in Nelson, in Fluvanna, in Buckingham. I think that... another one that is universal is the plague of opioids. This affects all of us. So when you're thinking about that plague, what can we do about it at a federal level? Choosing a treatment center which is run by recovering addicts is my solution to really improving the situation with opioids. But opioids is something that happens in Madison County. It happens in Pennsylvania County. It's everywhere. So we need to address all of these things. Also, for example, mental health. We have a mental health crisis in this district. And if you ask someone in Gretna, often someone will say, well, that's our top issue. If you ask the police in Fluvanna, they'll say we have a mental health crisis every single night and we spend all night looking for beds in Virginia hospitals. So these are universal problems. We have a lot of veterans in the Fifth, all over the Fifth. Veterans who feel that they are not getting the attention they need. Veterans who are very worried about the VA being privatized. They want the VA to stay in place. And so I agree with them 100% on that and am working closely with veterans groups like the Veterans of Foreign Wars to look at exactly what we can do at a federal level to improve the VA and to make it a much smoother transition from active service to being a veteran. This is district-wide. You will find the same, you will have the same conversation in Warrenton as you have in Rocky Mountain.
Again, our guest today, Leslie Coburn, running for the 5th Congressional District in Washington, D.C. Ms. Coburn, talking about the 5th District, what are your thoughts on redistricting? I want to come back to health issues in a few moments, but the size of the 5th District, before I get lost in health care, which can take up the rest of the hour, redistricting, which could happen in the next 2 years. And if you win this year and you run again 2 years later,
I could be redistricted out of the district. It's
yes.
possible, but then I would have to move to Danville or to Esmond.
That's right. You could be running and competing against somebody. You could be competing against Bob Goodlatte or Dave Bratt.
Well, I think, look, you know, redistricting, this is a state issue. And I think that people are very energized by making sure that we're not quite so gerrymandered as we are. And I think that's a very good thing. But I do think that what I'm looking at now is what we have. And what I find very gratifying is that we have a lot more Democrats than people realize. This is not such a deep red district. And we have really changed things. Right now, two big organizations, 538 and Real Clear Politics, these are people who called it right in 2016. And Mr. Silver, for example, Nate Silver, very respected, say that this is a toss-up. We are neck and neck here. And it hasn't been like this in many, many years. And it has to do with this blue wave that's happening. It has to do with anti-Trump feelings. It has to do with, in large measure, this big healthcare issue of people being concerned about losing their healthcare. But it is a very special year, and women are out. Women are out organizing. We've got tremendous numbers of women activists. And even just in the last few days, after the Kavanaugh hearing, suddenly there were more canvassers. So people have been energized by that as well.
Again, Leslie Coburn, she's our guest today, the Democratic candidate in the race for the 5th District U.S. House of Representatives. So let's talk about health issues. Medicare for All, are you for?
I do. I support Medicare for All. I support, first of all, there. In this country, it is such a huge chunk of our economy, the healthcare business, that you have to do everything slowly. It's like turning a supertanker. So first, I would advocate for restoring the Affordable Care Act. You have to do two things. You have to restore those subsidies for insurance companies, and you have to make sure that everyone's included. Right now, the Trump administration has just made sure that the healthy piece of the pool is taken out, and that causes the whole thing to be much less stable. So I would shore up the ACA. I would then absolutely advocate for putting Medicare on the exchange, because the overhead of Medicare is so low compared to the insurance companies. It's 2% versus 19% to 25%. People will gravitate toward Medicare. They will buy into the system, and that will make it much easier later on for going the whole way to a Medicare for All program. Right now, we have in this country, we have two really good medical systems. We have Medicare and we have TRICARE, which is the military health care. That's government-managed health care. Everyone loves their TRICARE. So we need to look at the lessons of Medicare and TRICARE. We also need to recognize that in every other industrialized nation, people pay half per person what we pay for healthcare, even though our healthcare system is completely dysfunctional and doesn't cover millions of people. They seem to be able to do it in Canada and in Germany and in France. Each system is a little different. So we need to look very closely at those systems. There's tremendous amount of research available on that. But I would say that the Medicare system is pretty good. You know, everyone, the Republicans attack it. They say, well, if we have Medicare for all, it'll cost so much. And the fact is, we're already paying $3.5 trillion every year for healthcare in this country. $3.5 trillion. That's what we pay. So, and in about 8 years, if you look at government figures, it's going to be more like $6 trillion if we do nothing. So I really feel we have to do something, and I feel that everyone in this country should be covered.
But if we want our children to grow up to be a doctor, then we can't expect them to make the money and drive their Mercedes and live in their six-bedroom, four-bathroom home and take home the profit that they are dreaming of doing if they don't charge the fees and walk away that they do now. If we change the system that we have today.
Well, Medicare for all, or a single-payer system, meaning that you don't have dozens and dozens of insurance companies charging different fees, is something that actually doctors are very excited about in the 5th District, because it is a hellish process to negotiate with all of that bureaucracy. And in fact, there are a lot of doctors who decide to be doctors because they want to help people. Overwhelmingly, they're not doing it for the Mercedes. They're doing it to help people. And, you know, you can always have a system. You can include in the system as the British do, for example. You can have private health insurance if you want. You can go to a specialist on a private plan if you choose to do so. And you can also have health insurance that's supplemental, that doesn't cover the same things as Medicare for All. And so if you want to be a specialist, if you want to be a brain surgeon who really charges a lot, you can still do that. There are lots of doctors now who just charge their fees, and they're not part of any insurance program at all.
What about the opioid crisis that you mentioned a few moments ago? I think every district can talk about that. But specifically with the 5th District, the days that you're in Washington, D.C., when on November 6th, how is that relieved when you're there?
Well, there are a certain number of it's a big state issue. Ralph Northam is very involved in the whole opioid crisis. But on the federal level, you have a certain number of dollars which are being set aside for the opioid crisis. I would want to make sure that those dollars are channeled to treatment centers where you have recovering addicts. And that's because recovering addicts understand that you can't just go into a center for 25 or 28 days, that you need to be in there possibly 8 months, that you need real counseling to get your job back or get another job. You need a lifestyle change. So the money needs to be put in the right place so that it isn't wasted. And that's why it's worth taking the time to go and find good treatment centers. I'm sure you probably have seen on our website, we did a wonderful film with Roads to Recovery, which is one center that I think is really worth looking at. And I noticed that Senator Kaine has talked about the treatment that he's found on a recent prison visit. And again, that was recovering addicts. And one of the prisoners said to him, I love this program. I just wish I didn't have to go to prison to find such a good program.
Again, our guest today, Leslie Coburn. She is the Democratic candidate for the 5th Congressional District for the U.S. House of Representatives. You can go to the website, Leslie Coburn for Congress. That's spelled the Scottish way. That's CockBurn, LeslieCoburnForCongress.com. You can also go to Leslie for Congress on Facebook. Let's take our first break. All right, back in action with Leslie Coburn. The election on November 6th, by the way, be prepared. Start stretching those voting fingers. So in a short time past, you were at the Batten School at UVA for a debate?
That's right. That was our third debate.
A quote or two I'd like to ask you about and give some examples. Our country is in crisis. I'd like some examples of your specific thoughts on that.
Well, when we have a president who impersonates a woman who has come before Congress to talk about sexual assault, I'd say that's an excellent example of a country in crisis. We have a crisis of leadership. Many people in both parties recognize this, so much so that recently in one county, after an event there, someone came up to me and said, I am the former chair of the Republican Party in this county, and I've had enough, and I'm voting for you. And that is a reaction to the fact that in Washington, we have an administration that's dismantling our country. You know, we have tumbleweeds in the State Department. We have a Department of Education with empty desks. We have an Environmental Protection Agency that's being eviscerated. I'd say we have a crisis on our hands.
Our government is not functioning the way it is meant to function.
Well, look at the world stage, for example. We are the only country that is not going to abide by the Paris Accord on climate change. We've pulled out of the Iran deal, a very, very important deal, which was negotiated by many countries, not just the United States. I think we are losing our leadership position in the world. Look at what happened at the UN recently. They laughed at Trump. I felt very embarrassed by that.
I think we all did. Again, our guest today, Leslie Coburn, as she runs for the 5th Congressional District as the Democratic representative. Some of the goals that you have brought up as your own, you want to pass environmental legislation. Can you be specific?
Sure. I think that... if you look at the voting record of our current congressman, and I think that Mr. Riggleman Mr. Riggleman said very clearly that he's going to continue, quote, the pristine conservative voting record of Tom Garrett. Recently, Tom Garrett has voted 12 times to loosen restrictions on toxic chemicals in the United States. 12 times. That includes pesticides in our drinking water. Environmental legislation, the first thing that has to be done if I'm in Congress is I need to help all of the other Congress people reverse the terrible damage that's being done right now.
In what way are there specifics for the 5th District that some of these that might come about or might apply to the 5th District?
Yes, the 5th District is certainly affected by toxic chemicals. And we have some big issues here. We've got the pipeline issues. We have two pipelines that are coming through the district. And at a federal level, we need to hold FERC's feet to the fire. We need to make sure that all of the things that are meant to be done by the pipeline companies are actually done. These issues are in court right now, but I suspect that after November 6th, they will still be on the table. And a congressperson needs to weigh in. These are unnecessary pipelines. They will not keep the lights on in Virginia. These are pipelines that affect whole communities. Look at Union Hill in Buckingham. It's an African-American freedman community that is going to have a giant compressor station right in the middle of it. That will spew toxic chemicals. That will spew methane. It will vent methane, and it'll sound like a diesel locomotive 24/7. This is an issue of environmental justice, and I will say that the NAACP has come out very, very strongly against this happening. So those are environmental issues. Further south, right now we have a uranium ban, but that's in front of the Supreme Court. It could be lifted. The Trump administration has come in on the side of lifting the ban. That's totally against states' rights. Right now, Virginia has the ability to protect the health of its citizens. This would overturn that, so that the people of Pennsylvania County and Halifax County and all the counties that will be affected by having uranium tailings pools, particularly in a very wet environment, and we do know that it rains in Virginia. This is going to be a disaster because there are 25 different health problems, severe health problems that you can get. And I was at a meeting in Pennsylvania the other day with people who live very close to the farm where this will take place. And what they're talking about on the Board of Supervisors down there is, what do they do about health defects from this? We know we have reams of information from the Navajo of what it does to you, and that's a dry environment as opposed to the very wet environment of Virginia. Things will be worse here.
You mentioned another goal is to promote free community colleges.
That's correct. We need free community college. Community college, initially, the whole idea of it was that it should be free. There are many, many students around the district who need that extra time, who need an environment where they can go to college without having to pay so much money that they get absolutely washed away in debt. And they need an environment where they can do specific things. Like, for example, they might be able to get interested in a trade in community college. They might be able to get interested in starting a business. We have entrepreneurs here who would love to go to community college and be able to take those courses. I think that should be done for free. And I think you should be able to study history at the same time if that's what you'd like to do. It's a matter of priorities. When you say, well, that would be expensive, it's priorities. We have just added $82 billion to the defense budget. $82 billion would put every 18-year-old in this country could go to college for free. $82 billion is bigger than the entire defense budget of Russia. So I think the matter of priorities. I think that community college is more important than endless wars. I think that infrastructure is more important than endless wars. I think a living wage is more important. I think excellent training is more important. So I just have different priorities than throwing our vast sums in our budget. Pretty soon the defense budget's going to be a lot higher than everything else that we pay for in this government.
Well, we can't balance the budget now. So how do we convince 534 other people, plus 100, to adjust the ballot, to adjust things to make that happen?
It's not an issue of balancing the budget. It's an issue of priorities. You've seen what just happened. There was a tax bill passed by the Trump administration.
For 3 months. Well,
The tax bill, which was supported by our congressman, what it did was it added $1.9 trillion to the deficit. That money, that gave a huge break to corporations and to the wealthy. It did not give a huge break to ordinary people. And
agreed.
Anything an ordinary person got is temporary, whereas the tax break for the corporations is not. So who are the masters here? The masters are not the constituents of the Fifth, are they? The masters are the corporations who push that through. So it is important that my opponent, you know, that we look and say, he's getting money from the Koch brothers. So what would he support? He would support that tax bill, and he said that he himself benefited from the tax. He calls it a tax cut, and he says that he benefited. Well, most people didn't benefit from it, and will not, and in fact, anyone who has benefited temporarily will face a tax hike once it is no longer in place. This is a priority. You could have spent our student loans right now. The total is $1.5 trillion. If you really wanted to put all that money on the deficit that our grandchildren will now have to pay for, if you really wanted to do that, why not give it to the students? Why are we giving it to the corporations and to the wealthy? Why aren't we putting it into, what about a massive infrastructure program? Trump promised that he was going to do an infrastructure overhaul. We have bridges that need to be rebuilt. We have roads. We have buildings that need to be rebuilt. These are things, it's a matter of priorities. That's where we need to spend the money. And I think I have an issue with endless wars, and it is this. War should be declared by Congress. That is in the Constitution. If you don't do that, a president can just go on and start any war they like. That is what has happened. And right now, the war in Afghanistan, which has gone on for 17 years, has cost nearly $1 trillion. That war alone. The interest on these credit card wars, which is, I call them credit card wars because we can't afford them, and most of the money is not even coming from the defense appropriation, it's a supplemental. The interest alone will be $7 trillion for endless wars. We can do better. Let's spend money on our people. Let's spend money on community college.
What are your thoughts? You talk about wars going on for 17 years and similar things that you mentioned. What are your thoughts on executive orders? Certainly President Trump has had his share in his 2 years, but they go back for President Obama had a number of them that weren't used, that were not laws that would typically have been brought forth by Senate and the House of Representatives. President Bush did the same. So I'm interested in your thoughts on executive orders.
Well, I don't think you're going to get rid of executive orders at the moment. I think that this is a good time to really go back to the constitutional authority of Congress on the issue of war. I think it's important to concentrate on particular issues and really get something done. I don't think you can attack the whole system of executive orders as it exists right now. I don't think it'll happen.
Again, our guest today, Leslie Coburn, from the 5th District, running for as the Democratic candidate in the race. Let's talk about President Trump for a moment. Has he done anything that you would say, that wasn't a bad move? That's something that the 5th District has been helped by?
I don't think so.
No. How do you see yourself reaching across the aisle when you win on November 6th?
Well, first of all, I think the Democrats are going to take the House. And certainly the Republicans are expecting us to do that, so we don't want to disappoint them. I think that once that happens, you're going to have a huge transfer of power to Democrats who will be chairing these committees. I mean, Bobby Scott was with me the other day down in Danville, and he reminded everyone that he will become chairman of the Education and Workforce Committee. That's a great thing, because in this district, there is a lot of concern about education at every level. Our public schools, pre-K, we've already discussed the community college and loans. But he will be a huge improvement over what we have now in terms of education. So there'll be big changes. But I think when you're looking at working across the aisle, I can see obvious issues. For example, we have a crisis of rural broadband here. In my own county, broadband is terrible. Internet connection is terrible. We have at my house what we call green broadband, where you tack, you know, an antenna up on a tulip poplar tree on top of a mountain that gets hit by lightning. So there's a bill on the table in the House, H.R. 800, which is bipartisan because it's Democrats and Republicans from rural areas who share this crisis. And they know that we have to focus on it, just like rural electrification became one of the most important things in this country. We can't have a situation where kids in the fifth have to drive to the library parking lot to do their homework. And we can't have a situation where if you want to be an entrepreneur in this very rural district, and there are many people who would love to do that, that they just can't be connected. So that bill, what it does is it says, we will have an office. It will be in the Department of Agriculture, and there'll be an undersecretary, which means it has power inside the bureaucracy, so that we can really get something done in a big way with rural broadband. That's bipartisan. There's another bipartisan issue, which I like, which is we have something in this country called civil asset forfeiture, which means people are stopped as they're driving down the highway, and sometimes their belongings, including money, are confiscated. This is a constitutional issue, and it's a bipartisan one. So there's a big bipartisan group that would like to work on civil asset forfeiture and change that. There are a number of criminal justice issues that are bipartisan, too. But I would also say that, remember what happened last year with the House of Delegates? Suddenly we had a lot of Democrats in there so that you could really negotiate. It was balanced so that then we could suddenly have Medicaid expansion. It was a great thing. Before, you couldn't even imagine that, before that election. It was impossible to imagine that kind of cooperation. That's what's going to happen in the House of Representatives, because you're going to have a lot more Democrats up there, and you're going to be able to, each side will have the power to negotiate.
When this happens on November 6th, do you have any idea which committees you might be assigned to?
I have a wish list.
And what would those be?
My wish list includes the Agriculture Committee, because we have to respond to agriculture in this district. To avoid that is just, you know, ridiculous. And we need Virginians on the Agriculture Committee. Transportation and infrastructure. We have serious transportation issues here. The first time I went down to Brunswick County, which is on the North Carolina border, I sat with the head of the Democratic Party and I said, where's the bus stop? And he said, Richmond. And I have a friend who runs the Board of Supervisors in Prince Edward County, and she is devoted to trying to get the bus to stop in Prince Edward. So we have transportation issues that I would love to address. Bedford County, they really want Amtrak to stop in Bedford. So I think that transportation and infrastructure, agriculture, veterans affairs would be an excellent committee, natural resources, and House oversight. House oversight would allow me to use all my skills from 60 Minutes, all my investigative skills, to really hold people's feet to the fire, like Big Pharma, for not negotiating drug prices. Let's haul them up there. Let's talk about why it costs $1,000 more for a particular drug here than it does in Canada.
Don't you think that's the one committee they'll never let you see?
I suppose if
I suppose if the Democrats do take control, then possibly you would be put on that committee.
Again. Yes, if the Democrats don't take control, some of these other committees are not the glamorous ones, but you can really make things happen in those committees, like the Veterans Committee or some of the agriculture subcommittees.
Let's take our next break. Leslie Coburn, the Democratic candidate for the 5th Congressional District at the U.S. House of Representatives. We'll be right back. And we're back. I just want to remind everybody that the next debate between Ms. Coburn and her competitor, Mr. Riggleman. It will be aired live tomorrow on CBS. You can go and watch it at Piedmont Virginia Community College tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. But, you know, if you want to be, you don't want to see it in the actual auditorium, CBS Live will do. But you should be listening right now, because we're the place to be here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. And thanks again, Ms. Coburn. Busy lifestyle being a candidate.
It is.
Well, I'm glad you made time for us. We talked about your goals. I'd like to get your feedback on some of Mr. Riggleman's goals. Stop illegal immigration.
You know, it's really important to remember when you think about immigration that this is an agricultural district and we cannot run agriculture in this district without immigrants. We have, I was down in Campbell County recently with friends there who have a four-generation dairy farm. 400 cows need to be milked three times a day. That's immigrant labor. In talking with the Virginia Forestry Department, they said to me, who do you think plants every single tree? The poultry farmers. We have a very important immigrant population here. They also look after older people. So we need to welcome and protect immigrants. This rhetoric that the administration has been using, calling immigrants criminals, saying that immigrants, that there's an infestation of immigrants in this country. This is really, really damaging because the immigrants in the 5th District really feel it. They feel it in Charlottesville. They feel that people are less welcoming to them. And, you know, right here in the district, we have a detention center in Farmville. So the word Farmville strikes fear into the hearts of immigrants. That's a private facility, by the way. And to see what happened on the border with the separation of families, to me, that is a crime. It's a huge violation of human rights by this government.
It was ugly.
It was truly ugly. And I really think that we need civil discourse on immigration. We need to recognize that that we are a nation of immigrants. I had lunch recently with a friend of mine who's a Monacan Indian, and she's from the Monacan tribe. And my farm in Rappahannock, once upon a time, just as Charlottesville was Monacan. So we're all immigrants. And I think that, by the way, I would like to change the name, the Seminole Trail, all the way down through the district, call it the Monacan Trail, because the Seminoles were never in this district.
He also says one of his goals is to decriminalize marijuana.
I totally agree with that. We both agree on decriminalization of marijuana, and I think that there are a number of reasons. It's a criminal justice issue. We want fewer people to be thrown into jail. 30% of the people in jail at this point are there for drugs. And if you're African American, you are 10 times more likely to be thrown in jail right now for a drug crime than if you're white. I think that's wrong. And I think we need to fix that. So decriminalization is a step in the right direction, and there's huge support for it.
He also lists that he wants to make the system work for ordinary citizens and small business owners.
Well, one of the things that he's pushing that will not make things work for ordinary citizens is he wants to defund Planned Parenthood. That's millions of women, many of them rural women, many of them African American and Latina women, who will not get cancer screenings, who will not get contraception. That's not good for ordinary people. You're talking about 2.4 million people in this country who need that. So, and as far as small business goes, he is a small business owner. And in fact, earlier this year, he wanted to sell his business and move it all to Pennsylvania. He has a business in Pennsylvania. His distillery business is also in Pennsylvania. As he put it, I think the promotional material is to bring the Silverback spirit to the Poconos. So he wants to create jobs in Pennsylvania. That's not a great commitment to the 5th District. As soon as he was chosen by the Republican Party of the 5th, a bigger distiller came out in support of me and endorsed me. And we did an ad together where they talked about how they're getting, they're in a crunch because of this tariff issue. They are a big enough distillery. The Virginia Distillery Company in Lovingston is a big enough distillery to compete worldwide. And, of course, the tariffs cripple them on that score. They're the biggest single malt whiskey producer in the United States. Of course, it's a very different, they're much bigger than Denver Riggleman's operation. But I think that they've endorsed me because, from their point of view, small business has to work with government in order to be successful. And sitting down at the table together is the way that we move forward.
Can we talk for a minute about Judge Kavanaugh and Ms. Blasey Ford and their interviews? I'd like your thoughts on what happened in the last week or so. We'll start with Judge Kavanaugh's interview. His
outburst?
Sure. Let's start with that.
Well, I think there's a lot of discussion now about the fact that his behavior on the Hill was not the sort of behavior we want from a Supreme Court justice. And it was very partisan. It was very emotional. And also, to say that Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony and what she had to say, that this somehow was related to the Clintons getting back at him, was very strange, a bit bizarre. I mean, it was really peculiar. So I think that a lot of the commentary now has recognized that. And I think that to see his performance, and then I was very happy to hear that there would be an FBI investigation. I don't know how much you can investigate in a week, however. Normally, that's just when, you just get started. As an investigative journalist, in order to really properly investigate something, I needed months to really tackle it properly. You can't do a real investigation in a week. It isn't even enough time to interview all the people who were involved in what may or may not have happened. But I do think that it was his demeanor and behavior, his treatment of the senators, I think made me feel that we should have another nominee. And I think the treatment of her was truly appalling. We need to have conditions where women can step forward. Men, too, for that matter, step forward and talk about what has happened to them without being brutalized.
I've made my decision. You know, everybody who's listening, you know what radio station you're at. It shouldn't be that hard to determine who I believe. You're the mother of two daughters and a son?
Yes.
So, but I feel the need to ask, if a woman came forward and said, your son touched me inappropriately, but all I can do is tell you it happened at a party many years ago, and no one else in the room is standing up to say is agreeing with her.
Yeah, but this is why you need a full investigation. You can't ask the question that way because, of course, we need to hear from Mr. Judge. we need to hear from Kavanaugh's fellow Yalies who are coming out and saying that he did get blind drunk at Yale, that there was a culture of that, which he denied. And I would like to hear from more people. I think he should either withdraw or we should hear from a lot more people to really fully understand the circumstances.
If he does become a member of the Supreme Court, because they only give the FBI a week and because the Republican senators who own the majority vote him on, does he need to recuse himself every time the case that comes before the Supreme Court has something to do in a political case?
Well, we see that Clarence Thomas didn't recuse himself, did he? I remember very well those Anita Hill hearings and how badly she was treated in a very shoddy fashion. So there are many women who remember that, and he sits on the court. So Kavanaugh will sit on the court. What it does is it discredits the Supreme Court of the United States, and that's a problem. And I promise you that if it happens, you're going to have a great many of these women running for Congress will be elected.
Again, our guest today, Leslie Coburn. She is the Democratic candidate for the 5th Congressional District of the U.S. House of Representatives. A few minutes left in our hour. What do you think the midterm voter turnout's going to be?
It's impossible to tell, except that you can look at indicators. Right now, you can vote absentee today. And in Charlottesville, the number of people voting absentee is very high right now, extremely high. I think that it will be a higher turnout than usual because 2018 is a very special year. I've never seen so many people out, working on campaigns, volunteering for campaigns. Thousands and thousands of people are out there. And for me, that's a great sign. But it is a very, very special year.
You talk about volunteering. Don't forget, folks, you can go to the LeslieCoburnForCongress.com website. As you mentioned earlier, Coburn is spelled the Scottish way. That's C-O-C-K-B-U-R-N. That's LeslieCoburnForCongress.com. You can also go to the Facebook page, Leslie for Congress. There is a tomorrow night at PVCC, Ms. Coburn versus Mr. Riggleman, 7 to 9 p.m. tomorrow. You can also see them on CBS Live. August 11th and 12th last year in Charlottesville was a big event. Does that play any way in your representation of the 5th District?
It does. I think that one of the things that happened, on several levels. One raises the question of free speech and guns. When you have a lot of guns that accompanied the free speech on August 12th, and to me that was a situation that shouldn't be allowed to happen in Charlottesville again. And I think that my opponent's reaction to it was very interesting. Mr. Riggleman said, it takes two to tango. This is ridiculous. This was a situation where white supremacists came into Charlottesville and wreaked havoc in this town, and we lost Heather Heyer because of it. And the idea that you would say, well, it takes two to tango, is very reminiscent of what President Trump said about it. Good people on both sides. And I just think that that's very, very misguided. So as a congressperson, we need to take the lessons of August 12th and do something with them. And one, we need to make sure that in this town, you had African-Americans who were really fearful of seeing these people marching through the streets. You had a synagogue that was very frightened by people who were had weapons and were saying things like Sieg Heil. People need to be protected. We need to recognize when the KKK puts flyers in our driveways, this is a problem. It is not 1955. We have to make sure that this doesn't happen. And I personally want to really do two things at a congressional level in response. I want to concentrate on criminal justice reform in very particular ways and look closely at school-to-prison pipelines when you're thinking about school funding. How do you keep African-American kids from falling through the cracks? I've spent a lot of hours talking to teachers about how to do that. But attacking institutional racism is a very important way to fight what happened. But also, let's think about what Heather Heyer wanted. And what Heather Heyer was very concerned about was racial issues, and she also cared about police issues. She wanted to support de-escalation, better police training, and I support that too. There are several bills in the House right now that we can push forward that will really help in the way that Heather Heyer wanted things to change. So, you know, I think that there are many lessons to be learned. I think that what we experienced this year, the memorial services, both at Congregation Beth Israel and at some of the churches, were very moving and very unifying for this district. And I look forward to building on that.
Last 2 minutes, why don't you take us out with your statements?
I think that these listeners probably do understand very well that what I feel, which is I feel that our democracy is at risk. And I feel it so strongly that for the past 16 months, I have put 7 days a week of effort into this. I think we need to flip the 5th District and we need to flip the House of Representatives. We need to change the course of this country. We need to serve people in the 5th. We need to make this country fair again. And we need to make the office of the congressperson totally accessible to people. They should be able to walk in and make their demands, and that's what we're going to do. The job is to serve, and there is so much that needs to be repaired and replaced, and I'm excited to be able to do that.
All right, everybody, make sure you vote on November 6th. And today's guest was Leslie Coburn. She's the Democratic candidate in the race for the 5th District, the U.S. House of Representatives. Ms. Coburn, thank you so much for making time to come by Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
Thank you.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.